Welcome back to another episode. I think we're at 323. Joe, how you
Yes.
doing?
I'm doing better. A little news update. Immediately after our last show, I became ill.
Oh,
And
really? Wow.
yeah, I did. And then, I felt rotten that day. The next day, I didn't feel too good. My wife, who likes to do these things, tested me for COVID. I was positive. And then the following day, I felt fine and have felt, whatever fine is for a 74-year-old individual ever since. And so the only reason I'm bringing up this fact is that there was, this idea about if you're unvaccinated, like myself, and you get COVID, what do you really expect going forward? And I just wanted to point out that it was like one third of the sort of misery that I experienced during the first episode, which is exactly what the, virologic theory would
Yes, what we've been told, yes.
And so,
Because more
in other words,
benign, yeah. Because
yeah,
your
so
body recognizes it, yeah.
it wasn't even a bad cold. It was really just a 24 to 36 hour kind of brain fog and no big deal. And then I guess for those who can't get enough of the details concerning my personal life, the 3-year battle with the Gophers for the front lawn has been lost, and the lawn has been destroyed.
Wow. So they're like Hamas.
Well, we call the lawn Gaza.
The long haul. You try to mow the lawn and it doesn't work, right?
No, it doesn't work anyway. So it's gone. And but in any case, I'm feeling great personally, though. Overall, there's I'm a little troubled by the degree of propaganda, though. I'm sure we'll talk about it. In fact, there's kind of a moment of diminishing returns that
Yes.
they themselves are now discussing, that they're
Yes.
losing. The automatons are not responding as they're supposed to with the propaganda, and this is what we want. We want the more propaganda they pile on, the more obvious it becomes. It is propaganda, and the people who are using us against us are evil.
Yeah, there was a leaked I think audio of a conference call. The audio was bad. It was reported to be the voice of one Jonathan Greenblatt, the head of the Anti-Defamation League, and he was lecturing, or at least stressing in his talk, whoever he was talking to, about the importance of capturing the youth. They're losing that cohort. I guess he's speaking about millennials and perhaps Zoomers, if you will. The problem is that they're just not getting to them, and so they got to redouble their efforts. Basically, their support is either Jews or aging baby boomers, and in between, the support just plummets. We're seeing it in the polling as well. Nevertheless, you had this March for Israel. Did you see any of it? By the way, it wasn't in Israel. It was in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. And I think they reported 6 million people showed up for it. 6 million.
Wow, that's a strange number.
No, actually, it's like a couple hundred thousand, which, they always lie about the numbers. It's probably tens of thousands, and they just say it. You can't. I think the Park Authority stopped doing it because it was very controversial. Years back, they would provide an estimate, and of course, the people who organized whatever protest it was would say, hey, the Park Authority is undercounting. And the people who were counter-protesting would say the Park Authority is overcounting. So they stopped bothering doing it because of the controversy. But nevertheless, now again, whatever your cause is, the number of people that show up for it doesn't necessarily speak to the righteousness of your cause. It just speaks to the popularity of it or the agency that your particular organization group has in bringing out the numbers. I remember the trick was back in the day when before over Roe v. Wade was overturned. Was you would have, of course, the pro-lifers would protest on the anniversary or close to it of the Roe v. Wade decision, which is January 22nd. So it was always often a very miserable, cold day. So less people were likely to show up for it. People would be busting from around the country. And of course, by the late 80s, those advocating legalized abortion and the Roe v. Wade decision that enshrined it, supposed as a constitutional right, would come out, and they'd have their protests like in May, and they always get more numbers because the weather was usually nicer, and of course the celebrities would show up. They had that draw because all the satanic celebrities come out for abortion. I know because I used to go to these things and go to, actually as a pseudo journalistic role, infiltrate both at both protests in my day.
Really?
Well, this was my idea of fun when I was in my 20s. So,
well, you must have had a great social life.
Yeah, well, I was able to get press passes. I got VIP access. I was always more, you know, I wasn't among the rabble. I was, you know, I was always able to pretend like I mattered. I was important and meet famous people. The pro-choice protest is more interesting because you run into actual celebrities. You know, I was like face to face with Jane Fonda, Buck Henry, you know, the comedy writer. But you sure. Who else was there? I met Leonard Nimoy, Mr. Spock, not Dr. Spock.
Was he in a Star Trek outfit?
Yeah, he's there. I remember we called him Dr. Spock, and he goes, Dr. Spock talked about babies. And I remember I wasn't being rude. I felt like saying, yeah, you want to kill babies. No, but yeah. And yeah. I met Gloria Steinem. I have a photograph of me interviewing her. And back in the day, back then, I just thought she was an evil witch feminist. I didn't know she was an evil witch feminist working for the CIA. Yeah. My understanding of things was a bit more naive back then. But it, yeah, this. But anyway, back to what we were talking about. This March for Life thing, hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands, whatever, showed up to advocate for Israel, particularly its current conflict with Hamas. And again, you had there was one instance where I think it was the minority leader Hakeem Jeffries in the House showed up, and he started lecturing or listing all the countries in history that have expelled the Jews. and it seemed like an eternity. It's like,
well, that's awkward.
I'm like, wait a second. Now, why did all this happen? I was like, kind of like lack of self-awareness. It's kind of an awkward moment. I had, Chuck Schumer came, showed up and bragged that he was the highest ranking Jewish public official in the country. And he advocates for Israel, which me as, now, okay, he admits that. Now, I'm not Jewish. Why should that make me happy?
Right.
Yeah. You know, but what if I were, you know, let's say a Catholic representative were to show up and say, I am the highest ranking Catholic public official. I'm going to pursue the Catholic agenda or whatever. Or, God forbid, I am the highest ranking white public official. I'm going to pursue the interest of America's white majority. But he feels
how about just asking for, $100 billion every 5 years for the Irish fight against Freemason occupation.
Yes, get involved in that.
There you go. There's an issue. How about that issue? Why can't we just talk about that?
Van Jones, who's I don't know what you call him, an activist, professional. He's paid civil rights activist, you know, do good or whatever you want to call him. Because he's a black activist. He showed up for some reason. He's advocating Israel as well. But he actually gave a speech where he actually, you know, this whole crowd's baying for more war, more bloodshed. He actually, I know this because he gave a speech where he, you know, he defended Israel and invoked his right to, quote, defend itself. Although, you know, here we are more than a month later, the raid's over and they're just bombing back to the Stone Age Hamas, I mean, Gaza, killing tens of thousands of innocent civilians. Call that defense, whatever. You have a very broad definition of defense at this point. But he says, we all can agree. I'm paraphrasing what he says, but I want to end of the fighting with bombs stop falling and children stop dying. And he was booed.
Yeah. Well, I guess we don't all agree about that.
Yes. So nevertheless, again, diminishing returns because people watch this protest. And I think it was Johnson, the Speaker of the House, Republican, showed. It was bipartisan. And he said, he literally said, I think verbatim, he said that calling for a ceasefire is disgraceful.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, it is interesting. And you wonder if, in fact, we are at the diminishing returns moment where this kind of barbarous genocidal idea, right, will start to become visible to the public, that the propaganda will start to disappear and they'll realize, well, I guess the Gaza military power that had this successful invasion and nearly took over Israel back on the, I guess they weren't quite as good as we thought. And it looks to me like you've just got a bunch of kids inside hospitals, but they get getting blown up.
Yes.
Maybe we could think about a ceasefire. I mean, why not? What would you say is the actual capacity of Gaza at this point to launch, say, a military excursion and conquer Jerusalem?
Yes, I think if they engaged in negotiations in good faith, which is again not possible with the Zionists and Zionism, and then return to the 67 borders, you could get peace there because people would make a practical arrangement. That's how the wars end, usually, not unconditional surrender and unmitigated slaughters. Okay, we've made your point, let's negotiate something, but they're not willing to negotiate.
Right. Well, I just wanted to speak to the point of that they cannot do negotiations now. It's inappropriate. This was the first time this was uttered in this current conflict was Netanyahu the day of the attack, saying that he had a phone call with Biden that was made public, and he made the position that we can't talk right now. Our nation is under invasion. There's an existential threat. We have to simply defend ourselves with every means possible. It's far-fetched, in fact, ludicrous, but on that day, you could, make that point with a straight face. But now, you can't make it with a straight face. There isn't any, visible threat to Israel. This is just depopulation. The excuse they're giving is not something that really can be defended, can be brought out into the public, but they're just going to keep going with it, and it'll just go as until they reach the point of the slaughter that they had predetermined was the amount the public could stomach at this point. I think they'll compress them down into about a third of what had been Gaza, and then they'll start the forced emigration of the population from that point.
Yes, it's a pretext. Yeah,
already starting this process. The Israelis are demanding that the U.S. take some Palestinians. Blah blah blah. So you can see that the attack of the LSD rave dancers and the beheading of babies was actually just a pretext, and now we're seeing the reality. This is just the conclusion of the Zionist project to drive the Palestinians out of the land they've been living in for hundreds and hundreds of years, so that they can reestablish what they have in their folkloric religious background called Eretz Israel.
Can we call it a final solution?
I think that would be what they would call it.
Another participant in the March of Israel was this character. He's a Zionist, Christian Zionist, John Hagee. You familiar with him?
Yeah.
And of course, he's there preaching this end times eschatology to the crowd. And like, wait a second. Are Americans comfortable with this guy's warped view of theology guiding U.S. foreign policy?
Right. Well, Hagee is just about as insane as any character since Caligula. I mean, Hagee is simply nuts. But he occupies a position of power and is seen as someone that, can be, given this idea of producing coherent statements because he is a Christian Zionist. Mm-hmm. In fact, he is the leading Christian Zionist. He's the one that the Republican candidates need to go to vet themselves for their degree of slavish desire to protect Israel. That's pretty much the
It's a clever manipulation because one his idea is you have to support Israel and the return to Israel to bring on the imminent
right. I mean, the eschatology is very, very vivid with him. I mean, the whole point you have to have Israel is so it can be nuked. And this is the beginning of the return of Jesus, the second coming.
I think the Jews know this is nonsense, so they just use them to support Zion.
Oh, I think you're right in that, Tim. Yeah. I would guess that. I would bet they don't actually take this individual seriously. But the thing is, it's a good lesson because all Christian Zionists can look at the relationship between Israel and the Republican Party and Hagee. Mm-hmm. And see what the reality is of their political situation. They should be able to look at that and go, we are simply dupes. We are simply dupes. We are just as fodder for them to, elect candidates that they come up with. We have no agency whatsoever. Yeah.
His eschatology, if you go on, I saw a video. Now, this is just four or five representatives and senators. They all were Boebert and a handful of Republican conservative senators voiced their support for Israel because of John Hagee's theology, eschatology. They parroted it. I mean, they believe in it. So this is fil filtered into the sort of the mainstream Christian Zionist Christian white majority conservative part. This is why you have this boomer support for Israel, and also the whole terrorist thing, right? Which we can talk about. Yeah, but I mean, it's.
He had one of my favorite moments in Christian Zionism on his ranch. I think it's in Arkansas. He was trying to breed the red heifer. You know, if you read the,
Yes, I think they're doing that in Israel too.
he was trying to breed the perfect red heifer that would be part of the process by which,
Rebuilding the temple and all that stuff.
well, the
Yes.
temple would be rebuilt, then the Third World War would break out. You know, the logical process to these things is,
So biblical end times prophecy is the basis for U.S. relations with Israel.
well, it's the relation, it's the basis for the relation between Israel and the Christian Zionists, that's for sure. I mean, it is simply pathetic. And all I can say is the Gentiles, regardless of the degree of sort of religious zealotry or, you know, what their understanding of scripture is, they've just got to think better. They should be able to see when they're being duped.
Yeah, the I mean, Hagee, he knows his Scofield Bible. He studied it. So,
Oh, yeah.
and the funny thing is, of course, he's a history of anti-Semitism, even based on, on a normal understanding, or but nevertheless, the ADL gives him a pass on it because of his agenda. Because the ADL is a, again, is a Zionist agency which isn't forced to register as a foreign agent under the FAR Act. They get a pass. So does AIPAC. But. It was, again, optics very bad, lack of self-awareness. Did you see this thing with it was Osama bin Laden? Remember him?
Sure. Who
Remember
can forget?
OBL? Before there's MTG, there was
Yeah.
OBL, and he this supposed letter to America apparently went viral on TikTok. I'm not on TikTok, but this has become a pretext for more social media control. We have what Nikki Haley,
Yeah.
before some people describe her as Hillary Clinton in a skirt. She has advocated more censorship and online end of a online anonymity because of the security threat that TikTok poses to the United States. And from what I'm saying, TikTok is owned by the Chinese, not owned by American or Western entity, and they want to end that. Because one thing, it's funny, TikTok is a lot less censorship on it because it is owned by the Chinese, so it's under less control. What she's really saying is the Jews don't yet control TikTok.
Yeah, I mean, kind of that's what she's
Basically
saying.
what it is. That's what American control is, because things are in America. But basically, it was a letter that went out, and people read the letter. It's a 2-page letter. It's about him supposedly explaining why he and his organization Al-Qaeda carried out the attacks. Basically, it's a short letter about blowback theory. We all know about blowback theory, about 9/11. It's one of these things where it has a lot of appears to have some explanatory power regarding those events. Of course, if we understand, at the same time, Osama bin Laden also denied being involved in 9/11 attacks, and so this goes into debate: who exactly was Osama bin Laden? What is Al Qaeda? Apparently, it just disintegrated into the ether. As the agenda changed. I don't want to get into the whole thing about what the true events of 9/11 or not right now. We don't have time for that. That's for another subject. Or the true nature of Al-Qaeda really was sort of a fiction that was conjured up by U.S. pro national American prosecutors in New York during a case, and then it was kind of created as a sort of a specter, or a boogeyman, particularly after 9/11, because that's who was blamed for the attacks. We all It's a bit more complicated than that, but it's funny that these people are, that are apparently, it's being the document was removed. There's a lot of controversy about it because these TikTokers are have read it, and apparently they're not they're now they're sort of repeating the blowback theory about U.S. foreign policy, which is of course upsetting the usual suspects, because they don't want, because basically if you talk about blowback, you're sort of adjacent to blaming Israel for the attacks, because there was a reaction to pro-Israeli foreign policy and U.S. meddling in the region, which is primarily done on behalf of Israel. But it does raise, because one thing is again, I to tell these people, there's it was Osama bin Laden probably wasn't primarily involved in the attacks. He was probably set up. There might have been an element where they were they were proxies or fall guys for it, or just sent out to show up for the event. It's a much 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 more complicated than that. But it is telling that now this would cause such a splash. I think it's probably a way to create a further justification for more online censorship and to wrest control of TikTok from an entity which isn't under complete Zionist control at this point.
Yeah, I thought the timing was perfect. It has to do with the growing media protests concerning Israel's behavior in Gaza. And, so this was now brought out to underline the need for more, I think the best expression would be Zionist control of the internet. It's completely ludicrous. I mean, what in the world would it be doing now? And I thought, even worse, it came out at the same time as the Beatles' latest single came out,
That's right.
So
I thought the Beatles broke up in 1970.
right. So I mean, I'm looking at my feed, and here's the Beatles' latest song. Osama's got a new statement out, and I was looking to see if like maybe Dwight Eisenhower also had some comment. I mean, it was just the pixelated reality is, it's designed to have propaganda effect. You just have to never accept anything that presents you as real. The independent media, of course, is in the same boat. I mean, you can't really trust it either, but here at least there is a chance for truth to leak out, and particularly if it's used in conjunction with skepticism and kind of Socratic logic, and so those forces are frankly winning at this point. I mean, you mentioned the statement, their concern over the fact that they're losing the young people. Well, that's just because the young people are more in tune with the independent media, and the old people, who they're able to maintain still a plurality of propaganda control over, they're just the one who's been subjected it to for their whole life and have lost any capacity for thought, right? I mean, and they're dying out, and the future is frankly bright, in my
Well,
opinion. Geographically, we're simply going to win.
shibboleths are stubborn things. They're hard, but they're also brittle, and they're breaking apart. And again, it will just at the passage of time, and that's what that Jonathan Rebatt's conference call was about. This desperate conference call, apparently. I heard saw the headline, and should AI be used to make new Beatles music? Well. First of all, it's not Beatles music anymore, because, for instance, Beatles music was music composed by either John Lennon or Paul McCartney, or Lennon McCartney or George Harrison, with Ringo playing the drums and George Martin working the sound machines in the back and all the engineers. That's Beatles music. They're all George Martin is dead, George Harrison is dead, John Lennon is dead, Paul McCartney I think is still alive, although I understand there's some controversy about that
Yeah,
apparently.
that's right. That's up for, so.
Yeah. And of course, Ringo Starr. But the whole point is still alive, from what I understand. But again, it's not Beatles music then. It's like saying, should AI be used to make a new Harry Truman speech, because they can capture the image and capture the voice and make him say things. But that's right. It's just kind of this faux reality. We're speaking to the youth, and indicate was an indication that they're all worried about the youth is apparently there's a group called Stop Jewish Hate. Which does that mean that it will stop Jewish hatred of the West, or is it hatred of Jews? But they produced a video. You saw the video I sent you?
Yes, you did. I did, yeah.
It's about a minute, again, and it's I'll describe it. I'm sure people are going to go on YouTube and watch it. Interesting enough is the video on YouTube, but comments are turned off. I wonder why.
That's always a telling sign, right? That the
Hitler was right. Hitler was right video. Let's just call it that. Hitler was right. And it's the scene is, I guess you could say, a guy in his mid to late 50s driving a SUV, appears to be an SUV or minivan type vehicle, next to his teenage son, and pulling up. And the father looks rather disappointed or despondent or bewildered as he looks, gazes upon his son in the passenger seat. Son's quiet, kind of looking like a, you know, he's like a teen, brooding teen, I guess you can say. I think he's wearing a hat or a like a snow cap or something or whatever. That's all I remember from the video. And the kid guy, the father sighs and go, "I saw what you've been posting online. Hitler was right. I didn't teach you to hate." And I'm paraphrasing, of course. And he goes, "You can say what you want online, you know, typing things into screen. Why don't you go tell those people?" And they're out in front of a synagogue, and the synagogue is people at the very time people are leaving the synagogue, and they're just a bunch of individual Jews, couples smiling and happy, not bothering anybody, minding their own business. And that's the video. So, what do you have to say? Hitler, and then it says, sorry, apparently last year, the phrase "Hitler was right" was posted over 70,000 times on the internet, which to me is a globally, which seems like a pretty low figure. I don't know if that's a lot or not.
It's nothing. I mean, if that's correct, it's. I mean, you know, Atwell is good looking, got half of that. You know, so it's
Well,
just.
you and I said Hitler was right about, you know, competing the Audubon, right about
And
vegetarianism, right about the Danzig thing, right about I don't know, strength through joy,
about their sigh being unfair. I mean, yeah, so
unfair,
there's
yeah, or Weimar
also,
corruption. I mean, it's like
oh, it's a ridiculous and almost pathetic kind of approach for propaganda. They turn the comments off, which
yes.
they have to do. And this, you know, it's like when Bill Gates would come on these public forums and talk about you know, the vaccines.
Yeah.
If they left the comments on, you would see how the public actually responds to the guy. And you could see that they're just flat out losing the propaganda war. And if they left the comments on in that regard, because the comments wouldn't have been, you know, kind of smarmy, you know, white supremacist sort of, you know, basically from a position of hatred. They would have been really well-reasoned, probably very sarcastic, but the arguments that they would make would overwhelm the propaganda. I
Yes.
mean, I think it's just almost self-evident. So the propaganda is now in a very fragile situation where it has to turn the comments off, you know? So that sort of indicates that the propaganda is not working to any extent whatsoever. In that regard, that was such a strange video. You know, because I don't th because again, like you point out, it's not real. The kid wouldn't have, you know, posted having a theme called Hitler was right. I mean, what would have been reality is the kid would have been questioning the rationale for the Gaza invasion, undemocratic financial power of Jewish individuals, undemocratic media control, you know, things like this.
Yes.
And those would have been what in reality a young person like that would have been, you know, mentioning. The kind of mindless anti-Semitism really exists almost exclusively in propaganda at this point. It's a pixelated reality. It isn't connected in any way to the movement against undemocratic Jewish power. Like I was asked on this one, I was accused of being a white supremacist. And I said, you know, that's interesting. I was thinking about it. I go, well, let me think, am I, you know? And I go, you know, I have to tell you the truth. I've never met a white supremacist. I don't know any. I mean, where the like country club I hang out at, I don't think anyone cares about anything other than canapé and like you know, I mean, honestly, I don't know anyone.
Well,
I
even a
don't
white
know that
separatist,
as something that they're act, you know, kind of animated about.
yeah, even
There
a
are a lot.
white nationalist or a white separatist would say supremacist. Well, I just want to be separated. Isn't that something I'm supreme at the
I mean,
very
I know
least?
lots
Yeah.
of
So.
like European American people who want to just hang out
Well,
more with.
the fact that non-whites demand proximity or access to whites is a tribute to white people. Right? I mean, to European, you know, ethnic white people, because why do you constantly demand access and proximity to them if
Sure, it's like, you know, you
white people
don't
are
want.
devils? Yeah. There's a contradiction there.
Any country club that would admit me is probably one I don't want to belong to, you know? And it's like, it's that principle that you know, that you have enclaves, they're exclusive. They look like really good places to raise your kids, particularly, I hate to say it, if you have a high fraction of Christians inside these communities, you know, people want in, But there's a price to be paid. You have to not only have the financial wherewithal, but you have to bring in the same ethos. Because if you don't, it's diminishing returns. It's sort of like, you know, San Francisco. The idea is, well, if we just have political power, everything will work out. Well, not really. You know, you put Mayor Brand in there, and then 2 years later, the stores are gone. And it's basically it wasn't as if the downtrodden were able to move into the middle class and enjoy the benefits. It's just that the hellhole of their reality is spread out.
Well, right? White flight and capital flight go in tandem.
Yeah.
You know, because capital is going to seek a predictable, orderly society. And that means you have to have values and principles that maintain that society. And if you invoke the very things that destroy moral order and chaos, you're not going to have businesses and functioning. No, you can't have commerce in that environment. So it leaves. So there's consequences. But regarding the video, it's, you know, again, you watch the video, it's just where just of, you know, in the video, the Jews, in quotes, are just a bunch of nice individual Jews minding their own business, leaving synagogue, leaving temple, worshiping. And the Jews are not displayed as perhaps like the ADL suppressing free speech or ruining the lives of law-abiding people they happen to dislike, or the IDF, you know, shelling innocent civilians in Gaza, or, you know, organized or Jews or organizations promoting the grooming of children and pornography. Like I said, what if the video had been where it says, go tell them, and it's a bunch of people leaving an APAC meeting or a pornographers convention? Yeah. You know, it's like, how do you want to spin this? The narrative. But again, it's like, what do you mean by the Jews? This gets back to the whole thing is categories. There's a category here of the Jews. They're political. They're a people. They organize politically. They refer themselves as us, and they have unique interest. I can cite countless examples of Jews saying that they have unique interest, and they're pursuing policies in their interests. So therefore, if you organize collectively, you better damn well expect that you're going to be criticized collectively. And it's a fair criticism, because that's the only way we can deal with politics. Politics is by its very nature collective, and people collectivize by interest or by groups, and ethnicity is still a very strong collective force. It's just the fact of the matter is it's been pathologized if it's expressed by the white majority. And
that's white supremacist.
That's white supremacist, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the trick here. And it would have been funny, though, if the kid says Hitler was right and the teenager started lecturing his father about, I don't know, Versailles Treaty, the Weimar Republic, the Mackinder Doctrine, and the economy, and, you know, all these various things. What they do is they take Hitler. Let's take the cartoon Hitler, as we've been told Hitler was. And all they do is to focus on that 12-year period. And there's no context to it. Well, that's ridiculous. That's obviously propaganda. There's centuries of history that, and not just bracketing those 12 years. There's also decades you can look at, and that's how you get a better picture. Those 12 years are bracketed by a lot of information, a lot of grammar, if you will. And if you just block that out and say just that 12-year period or the 6-year period of the war, you're going to get a very distorted view of those events without any context. And if you don't understand context, you're ripe to be manipulated, as this video was doing, actually.
Exactly right. And that's well said. The thing is that they want to hold Hitler up as basically the argument. I mean, Hitler is, in fact, this is the intellectual structure of what you are proposing, and it's what we are trying to resist.
It's the reductio ad Hitlerum, they call it. Reductio
ad Hitlerum. Exactly. Now, this is just obvious sophistry. There is, in fact, and I really like the comments that you attached to the video when you sent it to me. And you said, you know, in the video, it's just that they present the Jews as these wonderful looking middle class people exiting a synagogue, whereas the kid would have said to the dad, you know, Dad, I don't know those people. I mean, why would you? Of course, I have nothing against them. Let's talk about the ADL.
Okay? Yeah, because if the kid's not posting anonymously, the right. ADL will ruin his life.
Exactly. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the extent of Jewish control of the media. Can we talk about that?
And when they say things like any criticism of enormous Jewish power, which is self-evident, no one denies. Okay, they claim they got it by virtue of intelligence and effort or nepotism. None of the nepotism exists. And now you go to a point where this power exists, and power often has to be criticized. If then it will go unchecked and be abused, which we're seeing, of course, and how they manipulate, the narrative and media to ward off any criticism by claiming anyone who criticizes Jews or Jewish organizations, they call anti-Semite, and they're liable to have their lives ruined. That's going to resort in comments like, well, damn, Hitler was right. And how can you say he was wrong about that, about Jewish influence, when it acts in such bad faith? And you can cite one historical and also contemporary example after another where they're doing the very thing which you read about in history, what they've been accused of throughout history. So it's kind of like, no, I mean, I'm sorry.
No, and there has to be a kind of urgency to Gentile kind of clarification of our mind and of the public kind of discourse. Because if you think about Gaza, so this was an obvious false flag created pretext, right? I mean, the Hamas, invasion of Israel is not explainable by any other rationale other than it was a control.
Well, whether I was false flag or not, you can understand why they'd lash out and attack Israel.
Well, for sure, but they would not have have had a goal of beheading babies or killing LSD rave dancers. These are so that and the Israeli border technology would have activated. They wouldn't have made it 50 feet. So this is a controlled event, but then think about what that means. It means that they've created a very weak veneer of a rationale for what purpose? To commit genocide. So I am just asserting that the control of Israel and the the international coalition that control is part of is truly genocidal. In other words, our lives are at risk with these people having political power, because they are showing that there is no process that they need to go through in order to kill us. That what's going on in Gaza is really our future. The world will become Gaza if we don't find a way to stand up and break their political power.
The Israeli leadership and the pro-Zionist faction, those supporting Israel, both in Israel, supporting Likud and supporting Netanyahu and his coalition government is more extreme than ever. Actually, if you look at what's happening in domestic politics in Israel recently, the wackos are in control there, and so the moderate wing is gone, at least not in power. They're saying is the only resolution is not negotiation; it's effectively ethnic cleansing and genocide. That's their position. So, and then we have this thing. Well, what are you going to do with the people? It's ethnic cleansing. Where are they going to go? You have this. I sent that, you see that letter, or was an article written to the Wall Street Journal by two members of the Knesset. And one is Danny Danon. He's a Likud member. Remember, Likud used to be a terrorist organization.
Yeah,
and it went legit, okay. Like the Corleones. Went legit. Yeah. And the other writer was this guy, Yesh Atid, who is a former deputy director of the Mossad. So you have a former deputy director of Israeli intelligence writing an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal, advocating that the refugees from the current Gaza crisis, millions, as many as 2 million, should be relocated to Western countries. What? Now, first of all, this is something you created. Now it's the West problem to solve with the refugees. And so this speaks to the fact, again, and then you'll say that if Jews in America and Israel are engaged in what they call the Great Replacement, and this is a scheme to get rid of these people, send them into the West, and further destabilize the West with these millions of refugees, which is another objective. Barbara Leonard Specter, destroying ethnic bases of European states, destroying the white majority in the United States, getting rid of it to change its politics. They've openly talked about the browning of America being an objective. It's a great replacement. Now they're trying to convince the West that this is a solution. That's your obligation to take these people in. Despite the fact that this conflict is a culmination or result of our intransigence and our horrible treatment of the Palestinians over the past 75 years, it's our problem.
Tim, obviously the Great Replacement is not a theory; it's reality. It is going on demographically. In fact,
it's good if you support it. It's a anti-Semitic.
I will simply
say, if you're critical of it,
in terms of someone who lives in California. I live in between Hollywood and San Francisco. Mm-hmm. imagine that. I'll take every Palestinian I can get. You know, they bring, I know a few, actually quite a few, and they bring very clear-minded understanding of the world.
Here you go. Excuse me. The great replacement is becoming the great regret, because I just saw an article today. This is interesting because Jordan Peterson works for Ben Shapiro, the Daily Wire, multi-million dollar contract. And he's now coming out against multiculturalism, calling it a miracle of stupidity. So only now, as I look now, obviously, you don't have to be an intellectual to see the problems of multiculturalism in any given situation. It's going to create a chaotic, ungovernable situation. But that's very good for Jews, because Jews see that situation as easy to manage. Basically, they're a very powerful minority who is able to coordinate and coalesce and organize. They don't want a super majority, because that becomes a political opposition to their agenda. That's why they support mass immigration. They've openly said this. They said that the guy I quoted last week, S.I. Rosenbaum in the New York Times, I'm sorry, Boston Globe, if I recall, talking about they don't do well when there's a cohesive white, ethnic white majority. And white, by white, I mean European, Christian, and all that. That's what white really is deracinated European Christian. That's what it is. And there's a lot of dispute about that. But that's what it is. It's but anyway, they don't do well in any country. And he uses the word us. So he identifies him as being a member of this group, the Jews. But then if you identify the Jews, you're anti-Semitic. But the point is, now Jordan Peterson is saying it's not such a good idea of doing this. Now, the great replacement is now becoming the great regret, because you're seeing all these mass protests, and these protests are now displaced persons or immigrants from all the carnage and instability that NATO and the Jews have promoted in North Africa and the Middle East and Europe, United States. It's also starting to spread into the white, through the sort of the remaining white majority populations, where it's becoming sort of acceptable to speak up about this. But now, only now, great replacement is considered, maybe it's not such a good idea, because it's affecting Jewish interests. And that's right. Why Jordan Peterson, who's in the past has spoken how great multiculturalism, because it adds to the menus and restaurants in a given area. Now he's speaking out against them, because they're identifying that it's affecting Israel and what the Jews perceive of their interests. And again, the Jews, they do exist as a group, as we can see. That's how that they refer to themselves, as the Jews, as a people. But now the great replacement is like, wait a second, it's not such a good idea. Well, you know, this could have been foreseen. So I'm a little skeptical about the supposed superior Jewish IQ here.
Right. I mean, it's completely clear that the immigration policy will eventually create the clump will be ungovernable, and by that that means they won't be able to control what it actually produces. I think the plan, of course, is just to have the nation basically dissolve in terms of any kind of real financial or military power before it enters into the complete chaotic role. I don't know. I mean, they may be moving or have the idea that they will simply transition political power, world political power, back to Israel as the U.S. becomes, as Netanyahu described, at least according to internet sources, a nation dry as straw.
But they got to control resources. Ultimately, wealth comes from resources and labor. And they got to have a large country to be able to manipulate and control, like the United States, which they've successfully done in the past 60 years, and become the muscle, if you will.
Yeah.
Historically, they've always required a muscle. You know, the diaspora, that's the benefit of the diaspora is, you have the Jewish state. Remember, the original idea was you create a Jewish state and the diaspora goes there. That's the solution to the Jewish question. That was Hitler's idea, the Third Reich. But that was the general understanding of why they needed a state. We needed a homeland. The diaspora never left. They stayed behind and act as Sayanims or agents of Zionism, like Hollywood moguls or, Supreme Court justices. But they need a basis of wealth and productivity, goyim labor and wealth production. And then they turn around and manipulate, the law and finance, basically the non-physical economy, to get those resources. This is the benefit of compound interest and usury. It's a way to kind of leverage that and also to extort it, if you will. That's historic. But if they destroy the productive basis, say, which they have done in the United States. You see that with recruitment in the U.S. Army. You saw that in the ads. Now that now white people, men are now accept, are back in the ads.
It wasn't that something. I mean, just an amazing turnaround.
So they all the woke stuff. So the culture war, the financial war, the deindustrialization, the financialization of this economy, they're destroying the basis for the United States, which again has been manipulated as muscle for Israel and the Zionist Party, the Jews. If they destroy that, what are they? How can they continue to project any power without any, without the U.S. there to bomb people when necessary, invade
Yeah,
on
and
their
I don't think
behalf?
they intend to have the U.S., with that role for
But
much
who's going to
longer.
fulfill that role?
Well, good question.
There aren't enough Jews in the world to. They've always relied on the fact that they're a well-organized minority, clever. They infiltrate, control, and manipulate. And they, in the past, like when in Christian societies, they corrupt the aristocracy, and the aristocracy, by the way, just to their shame, would betray the Christian, peasantry, if you will, because they work with the Jews. So that was, that's what they did in Poland. And of course, Poland was disintegrated and destroyed. That's what it did in Europe. That's why you had usury. That's why the church gradually sort of winked and nodded at usury, because the immediate benefits, the people participating in it, were too great. So there we go. There we have, the temptation of sin.
Notice that they've definitely demilitarized Europe and the United States, and that means demilitarize, which is quite interesting in terms of like the Ukrainian situation, where they claim, well, we're just running short of everything. Well, what's really happening is that the two prongs, the deindustrialization, is ending up with demilitarization now. What that means is the U.S. really won't be able to defend itself. And if you look at the advertising that had been going on for the last couple of years, that was so-called multicultural for the U.S. military.
Girls with lesbian mothers and
Yeah, and or they had this a couple ads where they had a it looked sort of like a Praetorian guard of black women. They all had uniforms and swords and things. And I mean, it's obvious supersession, right? You can see that just in terms of like the hiring of Fortune 500 companies, how only 6% were of European extraction over the last year. Well, I'm sure that the military has had that rot going on for some time. I'd like to see some actual statistics of that. When they guess they realize they are going to need, at least for a period of time, some fighting capacity. And so now they've totally changed the advertising theme to try to see if they can get white males back
Well,
in.
you saw that with the defense contractors, where they were bringing back 65-year-old retirees to produce missiles. They can't; no one can produce the missiles.
Right,
The
exactly.
I think it was the Tomahawk missile they were running short of.
The Tomahawk missile, and it requires a lot of technical skill, and they just didn't have the affirmative action
Well,
force that
does
could.
anyone know to run a power grid? Oh, we got to bring back white guys? Oh no.
Yeah, but you can see therefore the future, right? In the multicultural future will be kind of like South Africa and Zimbabwe, where you have ancient infrastructure that no one really can maintain.
Yeah, but
And
see, the destruction of South Africa was done to get access to raw materials of South Africa, the gold, right? They had a huge gold hoard and the raw materials. And if you look at it, it is, but there's some other area with that is developed, which those natural resources can be refined and monetized. Without an infrastructure for that, if you destroy the United States, which is what they're doing, where are they going to go? Russia, apparently, China. I think that maybe the plan was China, but China may not be completely on board. There's some, they get a lot of dispute about whether Putin is controlled opposition or China's controlled opposition. Well, it depends what you mean by that. Meaning, are they involved in the process? Are they making deals? Are they compromising? Well, yeah, they're politicians. Even dictators are politicians to a certain extent. But for but China is an ancient civilization. It didn't begin with Mao, and although that it's affected its course, it's now sort of you have a ruling corrupt elite. But they're Chinese, and they see
Yeah,
themselves as Chinese,
I think that a lot of
and they're not. There's no such thing as yellow guilt that can be exploited by Jews. White guilt's a whole other thing. European, that's a whole other. Talk to Kevin MacDonald about that, and E. Michael Jones. You get some idea of what happened in the West,
yeah.
vis-a-vis the Jews.
To answer your question, what will replace, these hegemons that they've been able to control? The answer is technology. I think that's
well. That's we ah there you go, AI and transhumanism, yeah, right?
Exactly, and technical devices, robots, and things. You know, so that's what they would ultimately want to bring about.
Which is why you turn around and go and you hear the question: can AI produce new Beatles music? Yeah, you know, well, it's not Beatles music,
right? Exactly.
Can AI produce the perfect woman? Well, it's not a perfect
not
woman.
A woman.
Perfect right. Woman is not a woman because human beings aren't perfect, and what makes women interesting is not only their beauty but also their faults.
Yeah, and so
same with men. So it's like, so now we're getting into sort of transhumanist. We go back to that, and then we're getting into like World Economic Forum and all that weird stuff, right? So
yeah, so anyway, like I said last week, I believe I was talking about how the real world war is being waged as we speak. It is for the minds, right, of the inhabitants of the planet. And it's never been more vivid. There's never been actually a real war until now, until the actual creation of the independent media. I mean, that is the, you know, the way in which there can be a war. And you know, so, you know, we have to just fight it as best we can, because this is our moment. And we have to recognize we are in an actual war. And the effect of losing the war will be the same thing as happened to my lawn with our struggle with the gophers, is that absolute destruction. You know?
Well, in the end, the gophers win. Sorry, Joe.
Well, they certainly did here. They're not even interested in a negotiated settlement. They, you know, we tried to offer them like an area, but they just,
well, you know, good analogy for like the situation in Gaza, where I was reading about past like wars of liberation, and like in the War of the Algiers, the French were able to inflict like a 1.5 million deaths, but they left. Vietnam War, you know, a million or so Vietnamese died, with only what, like 59,000 U.S. deaths, only in quotes, of course. But the U.S. left. But then again, then Vietnam was then incorporated into the globalist economy. And yeah. And how independent is Algiers? I don't know if you. So it gets comp. But the point is, this is when you're fighting a war like in Gaza, when you have a guerrilla warfare, if you will, because it's not a conventional army, the Israelis, backed by U.S. firepower and finance, can inflict a heck of a lot, destroy a lot of infrastructure, and kill a lot of people. But a guerrilla operation is still going to exist, you know, because it exists in the rubble. The very rubble you're creating lends to, and for each Palestinian you kill, each Palestinian child that's buried in the rubble, that's going to inspire 10 more soldiers in the future. Pat Buchanan talked about this 20 years ago. So
yeah,
it's an ongoing conflict, you know. So it's not going to, you're not going to win, you know.
Yeah, and if they immigrate to you know, California, they bring the memory with them, and they change.
As we're seeing in the protest, oh, New York being shut down with pro-Palestinian protest. You have protests in D.C. yesterday with the crowds, and people are taking notice of this. And the college campus I talked about last week, you created this environment where college campuses was a hotbed of radicalism and leftism, deconstructionism, anti-Westernism. You invite these people in, but these people, you know, they hate the West. They don't really belong here, and they're not really Western. But the thing is, they bring their their grudges with them. As of course the Jews know that very well. So they create an environment. So then the response is to shut down, destroy the university as such, meaning destroy what remains of free speech and all that. And it was, I think it was, did you see Candace Owens, Ben Shapiro
kerfuffle? Yeah.
That was interesting, because I always thought Candace Owens was sort of a grifter, or just kind of involved in conservative ink. She's a very intelligent black posing as a conservative, and she can make a lot of money doing that, because she'll appeal to a lot of people, particularly boomers. They love the idea of a black conservative, because it relieves
them. They just love that. I know. Yeah.
Black conservative. Now, Candace Owens is her own person, and she's always struck me as being very intelligent. This could be genuine, meaning that she's seeing something. She's also pregnant, by the way. She looks like she's pregnant. So I think she's pregnant with a child. So the point is that maybe she's looking at the killing and thinking, oh, this is awful. But I think it started with an interview she did with a so-called Jewish comedian. And she was just, questioning about all the Jewish activism, the overwrought rhetoric in America. And she said, said, where did you just get off complaining about America when they've done so well? They do very well here, have nothing to worry about. Americans are broadly very pro-Jewish. And he said, well, that was the same of Germany and the Holocaust. She said, that's a, you know, she, and she called him out on it, saying, first, that comparison is ridiculous. They're another Jew referring to the Holocaust, meaning that any, but basically what he was saying is any criticism of Jewish power is a threat to bring on another Holocaust. And she
Right.
and she'd
It's
had no
bad.
patience.
We're back to Hitler.
Battle of Hitler, and she had no patience for that. What you're saying, and she called, she basically, what you're saying is we can never criticize you. And then she was talking about how the killing and genocide is never right. And Ben Shapiro, her employer, said, you know, her what she said was disgraceful, and she called on her to, he called on her to quit, which is interesting. I think that's a way to get out of his contract. So it all goes back to the shekels. But it is interesting because you have this, she's hired by her by him to promote to sort of this safe conservative view, and now she's rebelling against him, and so
Right.
his
Right.
golem has gotten out of control.
Well, but also it's, I mean, it's just a classic example of how they can't debate. I mean, how they have to shut down all kind of discussion of the of these subjects and move them into pictures of babies being beheaded are
Yes.
recollections of Adolf Hitler, because all of the topics are undiscussable because
Yes.
they all end up on the wrong side of the
So
equation in
it's
terms of
Jewish
propaganda.
narcissism, Jewish solipsism. They cannot debate anything. They shut everything down. And this is why that kid in that video we talked about earlier says something like Hitler was right.
Yeah.
That's this that attitude happens when you shut debate down. When you
Yeah,
don't
of
let
course.
any discussion or debate, and you accuse anyone, and what you're saying is that we can't have arguments with these people at this point. You know, that's
No,
I
and you
mean,
can't, and they cannot, well, actually the correct grammar is they can't have arguments with us.
yeah.
I mean, they cannot. They simply have positions which are not defensible in normal human moral conduct. And it's sort of like the Israelis, Netanyahu. You cannot have a discussion with him regarding either the inexplicable aspects of the invasion. I mean, that's just impossible to discuss. And you can't have discussion with him in concerning the appropriate aspect of the response,
Yes.
right? The personality. These are you can't talk about them. It's impossible, because if you do, the positions they have are only tenable, intellectually tenable, if there is no discussion concerning them. They are monolithic, but they are built on clay, you see. And so any discussion, and the whole thing erodes, and what is naked then is just this genocidal lust, right? I mean, that is an expression that's honestly applied here, by that people like Netanyahu and Soros, are exhibiting.
Yeah, and again, it's this call is the goyim, the Gentile, the Christian will make these universal appeals. The problem is that universalism is an affront to Judaism, to Zionism, because they don't, that it's a rejection because they're the chosen, they're the chosenics, the chosenites, the chosen people, and they simply don't look upon non-Jews as being full people, and that's a big problem. And this attitude, why it's very, I think it's much more prominent at the higher levels of Jewish power, meaning the power that matters, but it does filter down in the yeshiva and the attitudes and the justification. We see it with the Jewish comedian goes, where here's Candace Owens, his interlocutor, asking very reasonable questions, and his immediate response is the Holocaust, the Holocaust, the Holocaust. At that point, you can't talk to these people. And that's why there's no such thing as a Jewish diplomat, because they don't believe in diplomacy. And that we see that in the State Department with Anthony Blinken, the State Department dominated by Jews. And we see as they take over U.S. foreign policy, you can't have real diplomacy in a system of a world of a peaceful, coexistent world of commerce when you have Jews in control, because they inherently take an exploitative position, domineering position, because anything less than that is a threat to them. Interesting point. I was listening to someone talk about this, about Israel and America is why the U.S. government is being taken over and controlled by Jews, particularly the State Department. You know, these things is because if they were to relent and back off a little bit and allow Americans to have their government actually represent them, there's a very good chance that the policy towards Israel will be less obsequious and more geared towards U.S. interests. And that itself is a threat to Israel, because Israel cannot exist without U.S. support. It cannot exist without U.S. It doesn't. But, you know, although Israel depends on U.S. to for its continued existence, the U.S. government is controlled by Israel in Tel Aviv. So it's been infiltrated. So well, the thing is, both- if they back off a little bit, there's a chance the U.S. will back off its support, and then Israel's existence indeed may be threatened. So that's how they look at it. But from an American, I'm like, as an American, I'm looking at my response is, so what? It's not my problem. You created this problem back in 1948. You carried out ethnic cleansing. You carved out an area, and you, for the past 75 years, you've done nothing to address the grievances, the concerns of the surrounding population. Then you come to me and come to Americans and say, we're surrounded by enemies. You have to help us or else. That's ridiculous. And I think it's a fair description of the current situation.
It absolutely is. And what would be useful is to place it in context, like you had mentioned earlier, in which the whole history of the creation of Israel, the Balfour Declaration, mm-hmm. All of this stuff would start being reanalyzed, because I don't know how much honest information the American public could absorb before the whole capacity of the Israeli lobby to dominate us would collapse. Yes. I don't think that much honest information can get into the public domain. And then they wouldn't be able to do stuff like the Gaza genocide program. You know,
it's got nothing to do with the Old Testament or with God.
No, it doesn't.
God's not a real estate agent.
Yeah, it has
everything. It's very carnal. It's very temporal. The interest of carnal and temporal.
Yeah, exactly. It has British Freemason power leading up to World War I. It has everything to do with the theft of the Arab Promised Zone. And that's something that, you know, I always try to bring out whenever I'm able to. That, you know, when people like Ben Shapiro talk about, well, you know, what part of Israel is basically occupied territory? What part do you want us to give back? You know, it's kind of sophistry. You know, he's taking what he thinks is an extreme position against, giving back territory, you know, to the Palestinians. But the correct answer is, well, all we want back is the land that was stolen, just the stuff that was stolen. And, you know, well, what was stolen? Okay, let's just go through the Hussein, McMahon correspondence, and you can see that what was promised was everything from Saudi Arabia all the way to Egypt. That was what was promised. There was no exceptions. Palestine wasn't somehow magically zoned out. And there was no confusion about the agreement, Tim, because it was upon that basis that the Arabs took up arms against the Ottoman, lost 100,000 men in direct combat, had 300,000 casualties, had 5 million displaced people, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a profound blood price that was paid on their side of the agreement. And then what did the British do on their side? Well, they created the Balfour Declaration. That's what they did. And if you look at the letter that McMahon uses to explain what his correspondence with Hussein, he says right in it, well, I'm lying. I'm just lying to him. It's just a matter of words. Don't worry about it. Nothing will bind us. So you see, this is the point. The British, the Freemasons, because he was the head Freemason of the region, are not deal capable. They are not deal capable. They cannot make deals. They are not honest. This is the same intellectual position that you just mentioned concerning, you know, Jewish diplomacy in a general sense. There's just no point in having words exchanged with these people, because they don't, none of the words matter. At the end of the day, they're just going to go straight back to raw power and genocide.
Yep.
That's just all there is to it. So when Ben Shapiro, you know, puts that little smile on his face and go and talks about, well, what part of Israel do you want us to give back? Someone should bring him right back to the historical context, mm-hmm. and just go, you know something? We want to have a reevaluation of of how this nation came to exist.
And why is it the obligation of the United States to defend?
And why, and where does our, because once you see that it was created with, you know, as a pack of lies, then the commitment that the U.S. has to it changes. Then the commitment the U.S. has to it becomes something that at least we can be discussed, mm-hmm. you know, as of what is it really for, you know.
And also this, the intervention, the intercession of the United States and the military power that it represents, that it has, creates intransigence on part of the Israelis. You know, the same. So it means they don't have to negotiate in good faith, because they know at the end of the day, yeah. all military power brought it on their behalf. And, you know, so. Okay, Joe, I think we covered it.
Tim, I think we covered it for this week. We'll get them again next week.
Take care.
Thank you, brother. Bye-bye.